Chapter 38. I followed Devereaux from room to room while she checked for herself. Paint on the walls, still fresh. Love seat and armchair in the living room, still new. A recent television set, a fancy VHS player. Even the pots and pans and knives and forks in the kitchen showed no nicks or scratches from long-term use. There were no clothes in the closet older than a couple of seasons, no old prom dress wrapped in plastic, no old cheerleader outfit, no photographs of family, no keepsakes, no old letters, no softball trophies, no jewelry box with a busted ballerina, no battered stuffed animals preserved from childhood years.
"Does it matter?" Devereaux said. "She was just a random victim, after all."
"She's a loose end," I said. "I don't like loose ends."
"She was already here when I got back to town. I never thought about it. I mean, people come and go all the time. This is America."
"Did you ever hear anything about her background?"
"Nothing."
"No rumors or assumptions?"
"None at all."
"Did she have a job?"
"No."
"Accent?"
"The Midwest, maybe.
Or just south of it.
The heartland, anyway. I only spoke to her once."
"Did you fingerprint the corpse?"
"No. Why would we? We knew who she was."
"Did you know?"
"Too late now."
I nodded. By now, Chapman's skin would be sloughing off her fingers like a soft old glove. It would be wrinkling and tearing like a wet paper bag. I asked, "Do you have a fingerprint kit in the car?" She shook her head.
"Butler does the fingerprinting here. The other deputy. He took a course with the Jackson PD."
"You should get him here. He can take prints from the house."
"They won't all be hers."
9 out of 10 will be. He should start with the tampon box."
"She won't be on file anywhere. Why would she be? She was a kid. She didn't serve, and she wasn't a cop."
I said, "Nothing ventured, nothing gained."
Devereaux used the radio in her car out in the middle of the turnaround. She had chess pieces to move. Pellegrino had to replace Butler at Kellum's gate. She came back in and said,
20 minutes. I have to get back. I have work to do. You wait here, but don't worry. Butler should do it right. He's a reasonably smart guy."
"Smarter than Pellegrino?"
"Everyone is smarter than Pellegrino. My car is smarter than Pellegrino."
I asked, "Will you have dinner with me?"
She said, "I have to work pretty late."
"How late?"
9 o'clock, maybe."
9 would be fine."
"Are you paying?"
"Absolutely." She paused a beat.
"Like a date?"
she asked. "We might as well," I said. "There's only one restaurant in town. We'd probably end up eating together anyway."
"Okay," she said. "Dinner. 9 o'clock. Thank you."
Then she said,
"Don't shave, okay?"
I said, "Why not?" She said,
"You look good like that."
And then she left.
I waited on Janice Mae Chapman's front porch in one of her rocking chairs. Both old ladies watched me from across the street. Deputy Butler showed up just inside his allotted 20 minutes. He was in a car like Pellegrino's. He left it where Devereaux had left hers and unfolded himself from the seat and stepped around to the trunk. He was a tall guy and well put together, somewhere in his middle 30s. He had long hair for a cop and a square, solid face. First glance, he wouldn't be the easiest guy in the world to manage, but maybe not impossible. He took a black plastic box out of his trunk and walked up Chapman's driveway toward me. I got out of my chair and held out my hand. Always better to be polite. I said, Jack Reacher, I'm pleased to meet you. He said,
Geezer Butler.
Really?
Yes, really.
You play bass guitar?
Like I haven't heard that one before.
Was your dad a Black Sabbath fan?
Yeah, my mom, too.
Are you?
He nodded. I got all their records.
I let him inside. He stood in the hallway looking around. I said, The challenge here is to get her prints and no one else's.
To avoid confusion?
He said. No, I thought. To avoid a Bravo Company guy lighting up the system. Better safe than sorry. I said,
Yes, to avoid confusion. The chief said I should start in the bathroom.
Good plan, I said. Toothbrush, toothpaste, tampon box, personal things like that. Things that were boxed up or wrapped in cellophane in the store. No one else will have touched them. I hung back so as not to crowd him, but I watched him pretty carefully. He was extremely competent. He took 20 minutes and got 20 good prints, all small, neat ovals, all obviously a woman's. We agreed that was an adequate sample, and he packed up his gear and gave me a ride back to town. I got out of Butler's car outside the sheriff's department and walked south to the hotel, where I stood on the sidewalk and wrestled with a dilemma. I felt I should go buy a new shirt, but I didn't want Devereaux to feel that dinner was supposed to be more than just dinner. Or in reality, I did want her to feel dinner could be more than just dinner, but I didn't want her to see me wanting it. I didn't want her to feel pushed into anything, and I didn't want to appear overeager. But in the end, I decided a shirt was just a shirt. So I hiked across to the other side of Main Street and looked at the stores. Most of them were about to close. It was after 5 o'clock. I found a men's outfitter's 3 enterprises south of where I started. It didn't look promising. In the window was a jacket made from some kind of synthetic denim. It glittered and shone in the lights. It looked like it had been knitted out of atomic waste. But the only other shopping choice was the pharmacy, and I didn't want to show up at dinner wearing a dollar tee. So I went in and looked around. There was plenty more stuff pieced together from dubious fabrics, but there was plenty of plainer stuff, too. There was an old guy behind the counter who seemed happy to let me poke around. He had a tape measure draped around his neck, like a badge of office, like a doctor wears a stethoscope. He didn't say anything, but he seemed to understand I was looking for shirts, and he either frowned and tutted or beamed and nodded as I moved around from pile to pile, as if I was playing a parlor game, getting warmer and colder in my search. Eventually, I found a white button-down made of heavy cotton. The collar was an 18, and the sleeves were 37 inches long, which was about my size. I hauled my choice to the counter and asked, Would this be okay for a job in an office? The old guy said,
Yes, sir, it would.
Would it impress a person at dinner?
I think you'd want something finer, sir. Maybe a pinpoint.
So it's not what you'd call formal?
No, sir, not by a long chalk.
Okay, I'll take it. It cost me less than the pink shirt from the PX. The old guy wrapped it in brown paper and taped it up into a little parcel. I carried it back across the street. I planned to dump it in my room. I made it into the hotel lobby just in time to see the owner setting off up the stairs in a big hurry. He turned when he heard the door, and he saw it was me, and he stopped. He was out of breath. He said,
Your uncle is on the phone again.